Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Just a little unique for a Christmas song, but I reached out, Fred, as you know, I'm doing the Christmas special on Tuesday night where I'm going to play Christmas music. So I've reached out to a bunch of my singer-songwriter friends. By the way, Alex Rich from Y98 is here. How are you?
Happy to be here.
So I've reached out to people that I know, you know, focused on them. And Trapper, you've met Trapper before.
Right.
He's been here in the studio with us. He's amazing. He's a guy that plays like a venue like Off-Broadway from time to time. Really, really interesting. He had the notoriety of taking some lyrics that were discovered from the 1960s and a Bob Dylan song, and he turned it into an actual song. And Bob, you know, granted him permission for the lyrics and everything. So he's a really interesting guy. And he shared that one with me that is from some record that's out there that kind of focuses on some alternative music and unique Christmas songs. So I liked it quite a bit.
What I like so much about what you're doing for Christmas Eve in the 5 o'clock hour on that Tuesday coming up is that it's not just playing Christmas music. You've got a story for each one of these artists, and there are artists that you know and who have supplied you with music for Christmas
yeah,
Eve.
Yeah, for the most part, there's going to be, I'm going to pick a couple like that I don't know, you know, just national artists. But for the most part, I've got to unfortunately make the cut. I've got to sift through some of these because they're not all going to make the cut. There's just too many. But yeah, I will share some stories.
This is a nice idea, Mark. There's no way you came up with it.
I did come up with it. But what's interesting is I was granted permission. One of these days, I'll bring the audio. Maybe I'll do this tomorrow or when Jane's here, because one of the songs is literally from a woman that I knew more than 20 years ago, like 24 years ago, and she just vanished. And she had this great album that was critically acclaimed, and then she did this one Christmas song. It's called Family Christmas, and I love it. It's a original. You know, that's the other thing. A lot of the songs that I'm going to play are original Christmas songs, and they're good originals. It's hard to get a good original Christmas song, but we'll get to that next week. I got some good bumps coming up this hour. Ethan, you got Ethan's news coming up, correct?
That I do.
All right, I wanted to share this story here. This is in the Free Press, which I think if you're looking for real journalism, Alex, this is a little off what we usually do with you, but I just thought it was quite stunning, so I wanted to share it here. Let me offer a real-life example of this, what I did. There's a park that's just to the south of us called Pelker Park, and it's still, a year later, actually now it's 14 months later, has a bunch of gates around it because they cleared out the homeless encampments from there last year, mm-hmm. and then they put it around City Hall as well. So I'm the only one, I've said this before, I'm the only one that cares about Pelker Park and why those gates are still up there. But the city of St. Louis forced me to do a Freedom of Information request just to find out what was going on at the park. And all they did was answer the question in ridiculous fashion, say, oh, we planted grass seed there. We just needed the seed to take place. So apparently it takes 14 months for grass seed to take place. But I bring that up because what's happening, and this is happening with school districts, that's what the Free Press is writing about, when a parent or even if it's a media organization, goes in and says, hey, you know, these are public records. We have the right to see these. They're charging money for the copies. And in some cases, millions of dollars. So listen to this. Elizabeth Clare, the mother of a seventh grader in suburban Detroit, wanted to find out whether her local school district had mended its ways after it lost a lawsuit for improperly tracking disgruntled parents. Instead, she's the one who learned a lesson. Prying information out of local governments can be very expensive, and state transparency laws don't always help. So there was a $200,000 settlement from the Rochester Community School District in 2022. This was another mom who had accused the district of keeping a dossier on the parents that were critical of all the lockdowns during COVID, right? So this other parent wanted to know, well, let's see what they're doing in the aftermath of that, see if there's future retaliation. So she files the FOIA, which is the Freedom of Information Act, for 6 months' worth of emails containing the word anti-retaliation. A few weeks later, she hears back from the district and the FOIA coordinator. Her request had been granted. They said, yeah, we're going to give that to you. All she had to do was pay, are you ready for this? $33,103,232.56.
That's it?
That's all. The district explained that it would take an employee 717 hours at a rate of over $46 per hour to review the 21,514,288 emails related to her request. So, I mean, that's just ridiculous, right? But this has happened elsewhere. There's another mom, Jessica Opfer, that was told the same thing in Rochester schools. It would take $25 million to fulfill her request for records. They've even tried to negotiate down the price. Now, Jane, I want to bring this up to Jane on Friday because she's told me about this as well, where I think it was Jane or other people have said, yeah, we've tried to go in and do this. And Fred, even think of it from a media perspective, because KMOX or The Post or whoever might go to try to get these public records, they try to hit them up with a big bill. Because, I guess because they can, right? Now, I don't know. This is a good question. It'd be interesting to see if the laws relating to things along these lines are different in Missouri versus Michigan, where it's not as incumbent or difficult to, you know, to get these things. But I do find it interesting, and they chronicle many cases here in the Free Press from across the country where, you know, this is happening. And there's this group out there. It's the United States, it's USPA, it's a public education group. I'd have to find the exact name. So they don't want to do this because they claim that they're not legally a public association. Local boards of education, that group argued in court, do not exercise control over the USBA, meaning it's not a government entity. So they try to hide this stuff wherever they can as well. But it's interesting. And hopefully you can get down to the bottom of some of this because, you know, let me put it in real terms here. This reporter, I think her name was Blythe Danner at the Post-Dispatch, and I've praised their work a couple of times on St. Louis Public Schools. That's how she got the information, all right? She did a Freedom of Information request.
How much did you have to pay to find out about the Pelker Park?
Well, you know, I don't think they didn't hit me up for anything, but let's be honest, they didn't do anything.
It slows you down,
yeah,
though.
But it did slow me down, but they didn't do anything. Like, I asked a simple question of the guy that runs, Greg Hayes, the guy that runs the Parks Department. I said, hey, can you tell me why these you know, gates or whatever you want to call them are around Pelker Park? Couldn't answer that. That was too easy of a question. So he sends me to the FOIA stuff, and then they had to dig up the information. That took them, you know, a minute to say, yeah, we planted grass. It's just ridiculous. They should not be treating people like that. Now, I get that there's reality of, you know, workers that would have to answer requests and put things together. But the bottom line is the school districts in particular, they don't want to answer these requests. They want to hide things from parents, sadly, as much as they possibly can. Ethan, are you ready today?
Bring it on.
All right, here we go.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
How long do you have to fill in for Sue to be able to get your own version of the hotkey?
I don't believe it's ever going to happen, Ethan. You can keep trying, but we've done Sue's News for a while, and no, I don't think it's because, you know, we're still honoring Sue in her absence.
Well, it was worth at least asking.
Yeah.
We love you, Sue. We miss you.
Can you file a FOI?
Yeah, you can file a request or something.
Mark, charge
I'm going to send that
million.
To Ryan Wiggins immediately. Ryan,
now, typically with me, it's an HR complaint, so just file one of those. Join the club.
Okay, so people were recently asked what it means when someone says they don't want a gift, and this one just cracks me up because it just reminds me how petty people are. 44% of people say the person truly doesn't want a gift but won't be upset if you give them one. Another 19% say they may secretly want a gift but won't be upset if you don't give them one. This is where it gets funny. 9% say the person doesn't want a gift and will be upset if you get them something. And 8% say the person secretly does want a gift and will be upset if you don't get them one. So
I'm surprised on the last percentage, I think, the most.
Let me make something very clear in case there's any confusion in the audience or in the room. I not only want a gift, I want a gift that's valued at least $100. I mean, especially in Bidenomics, you're going to have to go a little bit higher than $100. So I'm going to just be honest about that.
Certainly.
What's wrong with that?
Certainly everybody likes a gift.
I just don't understand why lie about it. That's what I don't get.
Yeah, like, be honest. I want a gift.
Yeah, just be straight up if you want a gift.
It's like being passive aggressive sort of thing.
Oh, you're trying to be a good person.
Fred, this is what you do, though. You would say that. I don't really, and you'd probably mean it because you're very humble that way.
That's what we did for our wedding reception. We had no gifts.
Did you really?
Yeah.
That was dumb.
Well, we got married later in life. We had everything we needed.
That's dumb, though, Fred. You cheated yourself out of thousands of dollars. Maybe probably. Like
I can confirm that he did indeed do that.
Maybe like a child's first birthday, no gifts. But at the wedding, you can give me all the gifts you want.
How much later in life were you? Like, when did you get married?
I was 35 when I got married.
Well, that's not that big.
I'm going to be 34.
Like, you're my age now and having kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to be 34. Give me all the gifts you can.
Alex, I'm not getting
one. I'm charging you
double. Just because I was just given permission here. I've told you my deal on weddings, right? You know the deal.
Yeah.
You don't invite me, I'm going to give you a bigger gift just because I don't have to sit through all the crap. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sticking with the Christmas theme, another poll recently asked people, how good or bad are you at wrapping gifts? And about two-thirds of America said that they are good or very good at it. There, yeah, that's accurate. 1 in 5 people said they are somewhat bad, and 1 in 10 people said they're very bad at it. Now, if I were to ask you, gentlemen, what demographic of people in America are the worst at wrapping gifts, what would you guess?
Well, I mean, you're kind of walking me into an answer of the younger people, 18 to 34 or something like that. Is that not accurate?
Alex, Fred?
We're saying what demographic, like age-wise?
Age, gender, location.
Men.
Okay.
Young men.
I would say whichever is not inherently good at wrapping gifts is where I fall. So
Fred,
probably
what
that 18
kind of answer was
yeah,
that?
Give
an answer. Take a 18, stand here.
18-year-olds.
Okay.
I'll say middle-aged men.
The people most likely to admit that they're terrible at wrapping presents are men, especially older men living specifically in the Midwest.
Well, I'm going to have to confirm that. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you remember this, Fred, but we did this little experiment. Dave Klein, producer Emeritus, and I tried to wrap gifts. I think we did it live on the air. And they were both awful. But having said that, I mean, I'd be in the category, just being honest here, of Hall of Fame level terrible wrapping. Klein was worse. I can't even believe that that's possible, but he was
worse.
Remember?
Like a child.
It did. It did. Congratulations, Dave.
I try to use a gift bag as much as possible.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Here's what I do. My wife's Auntie Kit. Auntie Kit comes over and she goes to one of the guest rooms and I bring her some scissors and some tape and she is nice enough to do it for me.
The bows are always the hard part. That's always, I mean, I can wrap a simple gift, but then when you show up and everybody's got other gifts that have like these amazing bows on them, that's out of my
mind. I know.
I'd have to say in this room right now, Fred's probably no doubt the best.
I agree. I completely agree.
Yeah. I don't think it would even be close.
I'm definitely not putting my faith in Mark. That's
no.
for sure. So I did a little bit of research on how much parents are expecting to be paying for their kids' Christmas gifts this year. And I have to imagine these last couple of years, that number's probably gone up significantly because of the state of the economy. And I found that parents are expected to spend $461 per child on average this Christmas. And nearly half, 49% of parents, expect to go into debt to pay for Christmas this year. 9% of parents will be spending over $1,000 or more per child. And the states that spend the most money on their kids' Christmas gifts, New Jersey, at $712, Texas at $659, and Pennsylvania and Massachusetts are at $648. The cheapest, the most modest, I should say, South Dakota, $247.
Wow.
So,
that's
I don't know.
The lowest.
Those seem
that's
all like lowest. Pretty high numbers, no? I mean, I've never bought, you know, my children a gift. I don't have any.
It adds up. What I would say is, like, you hear those numbers, it sounds high. Like, to me, 1,000 sounds very high for a kid, but when you get a few things and it adds up completely.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'd have to do the math here with my household. Of course, Santa is bringing a fair amount of the
presents.
Yeah,
that takes a percentage away from
exactly.
you. So that definitely helps. My cap growing up, as I got into like middle school, high school, was $200. It's like, pick what you want, we'll get it for you, but you have $200 to spend. So that's how my parents kept it there. So we're moving on from Christmas for a moment.
Could you take the cash?
I did actually 1 year for, what was that for? For to go to winter warm-up and use it to get some Cardinals autographs when I was younger. I did actually do that.
There you go.
It's funny how later in life that shifts, because now I'm paying my parents. Then I don't get anything.
Yeah, well that's,
you know.
Yeah.
It just kind of.
They deserve it.
I guess so.
Taco Bell continues to extend their menu. They are adding chicken nuggets starting tomorrow, and they will be available nationwide for a limited time. They're going to be called crispy chicken nuggets, coated with a combination of breadcrumbs and crushed up tortilla chips, and that's what makes them, in quotations, Mexican. Bell sauce made with tomatoes, chilies, and garlic, jalapeno honey mustard and Hidden Valley Fire Ranch are some of the sauces that are going to be mixed in with it. Listen, I don't know how I feel about this, but I will say this. The last time that they extended, when they went to the nacho fries, I was a little bit hesitant. I love the nacho fries. They hit on those. I'm a little bit more hesitant on this, though, I think.
Well, I'm just kind of thinking through the process. Look, I have a 10-year-old, right? And she likes chicken nuggets. She likes Cane's, and even she likes McDonald's chicken nuggets, which is interesting. And she likes Taco Bell, but she doesn't ever ask for chicken nuggets at Taco Bell, and I don't think that she really will. This seems to be something for the one person in the car. Everyone wants Taco Bell, but it's still the kid that wants chicken nuggets, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Seems odd.
I feel like a lot of people do chicken. And there's a big chicken market where there's a lot of competition in the chicken world.
Oh, it's still going to do well. There's no doubt about that. Okay, we're going to do some rapid fire birthdays here because there is a lot of celebrity birthdays today. Billie Eilish turns 23, Christina Aguilera is 44, Katie Holmes 46, Sia is 49. That one surprised me. I didn't realize that she was that old.
Wait, how old is Christine Aguilera, like George W. Bush
44.
Used to say?
She's 44.
Actually, Dana Carvey said it that way for George W. Bush. 44, that seems young still.
It does seem young. Yeah. I would have thought she was at least 50 now.
Stone Cold Steve Austin turned 60. Brad Pitt is 61.
Oh, wow.
Steven Spielberg is 78. That is some of our big birthdays today. And now on this day in history, I have a little bit of sound for this one. 63 years ago in 1961, this classic by the Tokens hit number one. It's The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
Did you know this song? You knew it, though, because it's been part of pop culture, right?
Oh,
as a younger person, Alex.
Oh, yeah.
Last night, I was watching the Friends episode where the monkey can't stop playing this song, and it was cracking me up. Great
oh
scene.
Yeah, well, I do like the version of it that's in The Lion King. And by the way, on The Lion King front, I'm hearing really good things about Mufasa right now, which is interesting. Yeah, that's awesome. There
that's
you go.
A good one. 58 years ago in 1966, Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas aired for the first time on CBS. 27 years ago in 1997, Chris Farley was found dead in his Chicago apartment. Died, of course, from an overdose on cocaine, and he was only 33. Very sad. Very, very
devastating.
Sad.
Devastating. Yeah. He was so funny. You know, when I was in Milwaukee, he went to Marquette. He was a Milwaukee guy, so there was a lot of love up there for Chris Farley, but, you know, not unlike Belushi, far too soon.
And we conclude Ethan's news today with our random fact of the day. A little bit of a long one, so stick with me. Electric Christmas lights were invented by Thomas Edison and his business associate, Edward Johnson. Edison created the first strand of electric lights and hung them outside his laboratory in New Jersey during the holidays of 1880. 2 years later, Edward hand-wired 80 red, white, and blue light bulbs and strung them together around a tree in front of a window to the street powered by a generator. It wasn't until 1903 that General Electric began to offer pre-assembled kits of Christmas lights for customers. And that is Ethan's news.
That is an awesome random fact. I find that fascinating.
Very interesting.
One observation on the Christmas lights front, and I love Christmas lights, and our neighborhood in particular looks really, really good right now. I'm very proud of that. But I saw when I was driving 44, and I'm almost at where my exit is, you know, down by that Wally's, and I wanted to get video of this, although it wasn't safe, but there was a car, I've seen a few of these, there was a car that had like Christmas lights on the top of the car, and I've seen a couple cars decked out
the
more
dedication.
Than... Yeah,
there's
I like it, though.
There's a couple in St. Charles that I've seen a couple of times as well.
So I like the Christmas.
So how do you do it? Grind.
Well, that's a good question, Fred. I wasn't close enough to understand because I don't know if they had them plugged in somehow or if they're just, you know, battery operated. But the guy last night had them all over. It wasn't just on the, you know, the top of the car. It seems to be surrounding the car.
Yeah.
There's probably laws against this, too, if you think about
most
it.
Most likely.
All right. That's Ethan's news. I do have a little breaking news on the Ethan's news front. I don't know if you know this yet. You're off the hook for a random fact on Friday. You know why?
I don't know why.
Alexa Reardon has claimed that mantle for
goodness.
Friday. She's coming in the studio, so she's going to do that one. She's got a Christmas song she wants to play, too. I'm being serious.
Oh.
So 4:05 on Friday afternoon, right after the roundtable.
Christmas time.
I love the name of this band, Alex Rich's Driveway Thrift Dwellers.
Delicious.
Here it is, Christmas time is the name of the song. I like this one.
I like it. Yuletide wishes, you can help me to the dishes, because here it is, Christmas time.
Will this be on the
I don't know.
Playlist?
We're still putting the playlist together.
This is an audition.
Maybe. Maybe
okay.
It is. I'm coming up with some different ones, and some folks are sharing music with me as well. You know, some listeners have shared some music. You can always
any local artists?
Yes, absolutely. Emily Wallace and the Funky Butt Brass Band. I played.
Oh, they're great.
Oh my God! You when you hear Emily do Christmas, Baby, Please Come Home. It's amazing. Who else do I have locally? Neil Sosik didn't have a Christmas song from the Mighty Pines. I shamed him, and I said, you got a year to fix that. There's a couple of people locally, but I'm trying to come up with that. But yes, the answer to your question is yes.
Good.
But more so people that I know from outside of the area that are
Johnny
still
Holesome.
Touring. Well, Johnny, but he's coming in right. in the studio on Monday. So Paul Hall's going to be here on Friday. In fact, we're going to do something with Buffa on Tuesday as well. Dan Buffa, who's another contributor when it comes to entertainment, and we'll talk some movies. Fred, I watched a movie. It took me three nights to watch this. Paul talked about it on Friday, and I finished it last night. And it's I just want to say, it's just terrible. But I had to finish it because I had to know how it ended. He talked about it on Friday. It's called Carry On. It's on Netflix right now.
Yeah.
It's with Jason Bateman. So essentially what happens is Taron Egerton plays this guy who is a TSA agent. And no offense to TSA agents who might be listening in the audience right now, but no TSA agents look like this guy. Like, he's buff, he's a stud, and there's no reason for him to be a TSA agent. Outside of the fact that he's a Hollywood actor that can play this role. So Jason Bateman plays a guy that essentially selects him as an agent and forces him, and there's technology that's used here, I don't want to give too much of it away for people who want to see it, to allow someone to come through his line at the airport to get some nefarious things on the plane. I won't even tell you what it is. But it's one of those ridiculous action movies that you sit there and say, come on. You're like, and you roll your eyes. Right. But again, I couldn't stop watching it because I wanted to know what the hook was at the end. And then when you finally get to the end and what happened.
Isn't that the
it's
worst?
Even more ridiculous. So
the worst is when you watch a movie too long and you really just, you don't care anymore, but you still are just trying to figure out the ending.
That's what this was. This is exactly
what this
was. 3 days? Well, because I started
what's the runtime of this movie?
2 hours. But I started it on Sunday night. I watched 15 minutes. I was drifting. I'm like, okay. And then I think I picked it up on I picked it up on Monday night after watching a little football because football sucked, and I only got through. And I had an hour left last night. I watched the rest of it.
It's funny
last
you
night.
Talk about a two-hour movie taking you 3 days. Have you had the chance to see Wicked by chance yet?
And here's what's interesting about that. I can compare and contrast because I've admitted that I'm relatively spoiled still because I'm on the. I'm on the outside looking in of some critics groups, and I was a longtime member of the Critics' Choice Awards. They just announced nominations. Paul Hall is a longtime member as well. And Paul and I we've done radio. We've done reviews on the radio now for 20-plus years. We used to hang out in Milwaukee. That's how I know him. So I'm very spoiled. I have access through a lot of the platforms that I'm afforded to see things that are in the theaters in the comfort of my home. Now, I wanted to see Wicked in the theater, and Alex, I'm going to tell you, I'll be honest with you, I think I cheated myself. Yeah. I watched it two Fridays ago. In my basement with my daughter and my wife who had seen it before and then my wife's aunt who had not seen it, and I put my phone, you've been in my house, so I put my phone on the bar behind me because I didn't want to be distracted, so I was charging it on the bar behind me, and I thought I'm going to just try to watch this movie like I'm in a movie theater and not be distracted. That movie's 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yep.
I sat my ass on the couch. I never even got up one time.
Really?
I was blown away. Now, admit, you know this, musicals aren't for everyone. There's a lot of men listening right now. There's women. My wife's notorious. She likes Wicked. But, Fred, I don't know if you remember this, but there have been times where I've taken Becky to things. And, what was it? What was the Jennifer Holliday? Dreamgirls. Remember they redid Dreamgirls? Didn't they?
Jennifer Hudson?
They did it with Jennifer Hudson, but it was Jennifer Holliday originally. So they redid it 10, 15 years ago, whenever it was. And we're sitting in the theater, and my wife goes, wait, this is a musical? and she's done that a couple of times. And now it's a standing joke. So like when Wicked started, I actually leaned over and said, wait, this is a musical? But not everyone likes musicals, and I get that. But I thought it was spectacular.
Wouldn't you say, though, for people that don't particularly like musicals, that this is...
Yes.
This is just such an entry level. It doesn't sound entry level at 2 hours and 40 minutes long, but it's so easy to like.
Well, I think so, but you have to kind of get into the music, and musicals aren't for everyone. I mean, I'm just going to say that.
I think
there's guys that I know that would never even press play one time on a musical. But to your point, what I've said about Wicked, I've said this in the past for years. I've said it's the musical for people who don't like musicals. Because if you take a shot at it, you know The Wizard of Oz. So there's a lot of things that are instantly relatable to anyone who's in the audience because you know The Wizard of Oz.
Right. I loved it at the Fox. It was a great experience.
Well, every song is catchy. Yeah. Every single song on there is catchy.
You know what, though? I'm just going to be honest with you, and I think I may have told you. Damn you, Alex Rich. So I don't know that I want you to do this right now because then it'll get stuck in my head again. I cannot listen to popular without thinking about your version.
You know what? Mark did text me this. I do remember this. Yeah, I tend to leave an impression.
You told me, and maybe we were even talking about, maybe we were talking about Wiccan, me taking Alexa because I took her again a year ago. She's seen it twice, even though she's only 9.5 years old. And Alex, who's on Y98 every morning, you're standing over here in the studio like this, and you said, oh, yeah, I know every word to popular.
You know what it was?
Popular.
It was they had just announced the trailer had just dropped, I believe, for the movie, and it was about a year ago. And it's my little, you know, my little party trick, and I pulled it out here in the studio saying every word to
you
popular.
Sure? You don't want him to do it?
Not right now, because then it gets stuck in
maybe
my head
again.
Maybe
on the way out.
Yeah, maybe on the way. But I was very impressed with that.
How did you feel like, you know, they acted out like, during the songs, not so much choreography, but like everything that was involved was like where they were and how it made sense with all the songs. Like to me, I like the songs because they sound catchy. The music's fun, right? But I kind of tend to ignore a lot of lyrics and their meaning and how they're telling a story at times. And for me, I think the movie brought that more to life. And well, you know me, Mark. I'm not very smart as it is.
Well, that's what
so
I heard there.
What I heard there
is I'm not smart enough to understand the lyrics, so I needed a movie to...
I'm a visual learner, Mark.
I think I'm that way, too. I think there are a lot of songs that I have no idea what they are, but I know all the words, and I never stop to think what I'm singing to myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and somebody says, oh, wow, you know what that's about? I'm like, I had no idea.
Well, that does happen, even to me. Like, there's a song, it's weird, maybe I could pick one out, I don't think I can right now, but there's a song maybe you've listened to for decades, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait a second, that says that, okay.
Yeah, you don't fully get the meaning of it.
Right. But you know, to your point on the movie, look, I just thought it was fantastic.
A+.
Everything about that visually, yeah, A+. Yeah. I would give that movie, like, if I was still doing a top 10 list, which, like, that's federal law required with critics, you have to do your top 10 movies of the year,
mm-hmm.
I haven't seen everything. All right, so I've seen September 5th, which is one of those that's getting a lot of buzz for the Oscar. I'm going to watch the Bob Dylan movie this weekend. That opens on Christmas Day. Our friend Norbert Leo Butz,
that's right,
is in that. And of course, here's something else about Wicked that I didn't know. So you know that Kristen Chenoweth and what's her name from Frozen, they're the original cast
Idina
members.
Idina Menzel.
So they have a pretty significant role in Wicked. You see them,
yep,
and they get to be highlighted. So my feeling when I was watching that is, and I told Steve Butz, state rep who, you know, is on the show on a regular basis, I said, hey, where the hell's your brother? Well, apparently he was, because Steve's brother Norbert was the original Fiero in Wicked on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
He is in with his wife and I think maybe even his kids beginning.
His wife was the original Nessa as well on Broadway.
I think I'd forgotten about
mm-hmm.
that.
And then they got married, yeah. And while
how did I miss that?
Yeah, and while we're on that topic, I will say my review of Fiero was that, I told Steve this as well, Norbert's voice was just so much more powerful than
I
the
thought
guy that
dude
played.
Was pretty good, though.
He was pretty good, but, you know, this was the movie. This guy was hired for his looks more than he was hired for his
well,
voice.
Well, you know what I like about him? And Norbert had posted this on Instagram. He was walking around Manhattan with a T-shirt of Norbert.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, to pay homage to the original Fiero, which I thought was
love it.
Was pretty cool.
I love it.
The only, I mean, honestly, Alex, the only criticism I would have is, what's her name? It's just too damn skinny.
Yeah, I was going to ask. There was a lot of concern with Ariana Grande.
She's too skinny.
She's, I mean, it's, you know.
She doesn't look healthy.
She does not look like she had in the past.
But I would also say this, that she was made to play that role, right?
Oh, 100%. Well, I think Kristen Chenoweth was truly made to play that role, and Ariana Grande at a young age knew that at some point in life she wanted to replay that role.
I thought it was really good. So check it out if you haven't yet. Hang on, we're coming back with a little bit more. It's a group called Elephonic with this song.
Christmas time again.
Tom Petty does a pretty good version of that I use from time to time. Alex Rich from Y98 hanging out here on a Wednesday afternoon. You doing any traveling? You travel a lot. You going anywhere over the holidays?
I do travel a lot. You know, I thought about going to the, you know, my Hoosiers are kicking off the college football playoff this Friday night, and I was going to go voyage over to South Bend and go to Notre Dame, but I don't have a ticket yet, and it's just doing that drive with no ticket and trying to get lucky and get one under like $400 when I'm there. Just, I don't know if it's right. It's well, the wise choice right now.
You're engaged to be married, so getting lucky would be the last thing that should be on your mind, but I understand your point. Look, that's going to be an exciting game, right?
It's going to be awesome. I mean, I think...
And by the way, hashtag things I didn't have on my bingo card this year. My Hoosiers are going to play in the college football playoff,
something?
Right?
Isn't that something? Isn't that something?
But I love it. I really do. I wish it was Mizzou. But I like that there's some teams that aren't typical powerhouses, and I would love... No offense to my Notre Dame friends in the audience. I'd love for the Hoosiers to win that game on Friday night.
I think we're a very likable team. I think, again, no offense to any of the Notre Dame fans, but I think Notre Dame is also a team that's easy for a lot of people to dislike.
Of
I think there's a lot of people that hate Notre Dame.
Right.
I don't know that there's many people other than Purdue fans maybe that don't like the Indiana Hoosiers.
By the way, on the topic of Purdue, I missed this. They were flashing up last night some of the coaching carousel things, and Barry Odom was appointed the new head coach of Purdue. Former Mizzou assistant went down to, where was he at?
Next year?
Yeah, he was down at South. Where did your kids go to school, Fred? Was it?
One went to Rolla and one went to SLU.
Well, okay, maybe I'm Springfield. What's Springfield? Anyway,
Missouri State?
Oh, yeah, he was there, and then he went to Vegas, Nevada. So he was the head coach of UNLV, and I guess he got the Purdue gig, which is kind of interesting.
Wow.
Hey, how about this? This is from, we actually stole this from The Five a few minutes ago. We looked up on the screen, and they were talking about this. The San Francisco Department of Public Health has hired a consultant on weight stigma and weight neutrality. Despite the city being in the midst of a battle against rampant homelessness, open-air drug use, and violent crime, Virgie Tovar is her name, a self-described anti-weight-based discrimination expert. Who knew? Describes herself as a prominent advocate for, guys, fat positivity and body acceptance. Announcing her appointment on Instagram, she called it an absolute dream come true. The consultancy is an absolute dream come true, and it's my biggest hope and belief that weight neutrality will be the future of public health. Do you know what weight neutrality is by any chance? Does anyone know exactly what that is?
Mm-mm.
I don't either. I think it means that you just can be fat and be proud of it and not have to worry about anything else. She actually wrote a book called You Have the Right to Remain Fat. She positions herself as a leading voice against weight-based discrimination. The website that she has describes her as a plus-size Latina author, lecturer, and expert on body positivity with over a decade of experience. Look, on a serious front, I get, and we've talked about this even recently, Fred, that some people are very challenged when it comes to their weight loss,
sure.
Right? So I wouldn't even rule out that Ozempic and some of these other things would be beneficiary to, you know,
Well,
to a lot of people. But let's be honest about something else. There are people that don't care what they put into their body. They don't eat healthy. This is one of the reasons I'm curious, and I know that if Sue was here today, she'd talk about this. RFK Jr. focusing on healthy eating and healthy habits. We don't ever discuss this. Like when we were going through COVID, and we still haven't gone through the autopsy of all the bad things that have happened. But, you know, putting the right things in your body, keeping your, immunity level high, is an important thing to do no matter what. And that means eating the right things and filling those nutritional gaps, all that stuff. But it's stunning how little proper nutrition has ever been discussed on a national level when it comes to this or really overeating. You know, so maybe a little focus on eating good food and not having as many additives and preservatives and all this other stuff. Maybe we need a little focus on that right now.
It seems like a good idea, but I don't know if the politics or a government is the place, you know, to do it. Maybe more... In the medical sense.
Seems like a good idea, but
which,
also at the same
thing,
time.
Which thing, though? Which thing, Fred?
Have a fat positivity.
Oh, no, I don't think that's a good idea at all. I don't want that at all.
I think there's a fine line where, like what you said, though, where you bring up, okay, you know, being overweight or overly obese, like, that's okay, but there are also health factors that come along with that.
Yeah. See, I don't think it is okay. Right. And I think we need, I'm not saying we should body shame, but I think someone has to go up there and at least be honest about what people are doing to their bodies with fast food and other things that aren't good for you, and emphasize that, you know, moderation is something that you can maybe participate in. So I think this is lunacy what they're doing in San Francisco.
Well, I just don't see why
which typically is lunacy.
Yeah,
there.
Why it should even have a place in city government.
It shouldn't, Fred. I think you answered your own question, because especially considering San Francisco. We'll have to ask Jeff Smith about this. You know, Jeff has a very good friend who was just elected as the mayor of San Francisco. And, he's a progressive, I'm sure, but it was a little pushback on some of the other nonsense that they had done in San Francisco. I'd love to see, you know, how much that person is paid. I might have time for this on that front. This is good. I think it was our friend Dave Strom from hotair.com that posted about this earlier, Fred. But they're trying to push through in this Biden administration before, you know, the end of their term, a bunch of different very, very high-paying jobs, civil service jobs that would be protected the way that they're trying to kind of shove this through. And you're talking, you know, $180,000, $250,000, $300,000 salaries with many of these positions. And they're trying to make them, again, they're trying to ink this before the end of the term, so it's irreversible. So there's some nonsense that's going on, certainly on Capitol Hill.
It's like preemptive pardons.
Well, it sort of is. Like, yeah, I think it is a lot like that.
Preemptive protections.
And we'll talk to, you know, Bob Onder about this, incoming Congressman Bob Onder, because I think he'll have some thoughts. He's going to talk about the CR and the controversy about that. I got to find that, though, because I'm looking for it right now. All the details, when you hear the salaries and some of the positions, you'd probably be shocked. I think a lot of people would be shocked if they heard that. Alex Rich, great to see you.
Hey, great to see you guys.
I think you mentioned last week that Hanukkah starts when Christmas starts.
It does, so we'll be celebrating.
Happy Hanukkah. Now, appreciate. Do you have a Christmas tree in your house or not?
We don't.
Okay.
We don't.
But some Jewish people do,
I'm
though, right?
I'm open to it.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a, you know, seems like a pain for us a little bit that, you know, I don't have to have a tree. And I don't have the time to do it, but Annie's welcome to, I've told her, and you know, the grandparents' house, her parents' house, that's what that's for.
I have three trees, so you can come over
we'll take our picture in front of your tree and call it ours.
Exactly. We'll have a great holiday, if you will. Fred, we're going to come back with Bob Onder in the next hour, and then John Seiler, who's a researcher at the National Associate of Scholars. John's done a great job at exposing the DEI nonsense. And there's a new report. He actually shared this with me yesterday about Kansas, KU, and its new center, which empowers activists to oppose anti-trans laws, which is fascinating. So we'll get to that in the next hour. Plus, an audio cut of the day and a whole lot more.
Get more at 971talk.com.